seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, it's Golf Weekly. These are exciting times, mainly because Peter Lowry is back on the coke.
Thanks, Joe. The proper Coca-Cola rather than the Coke.
So hang on. The genesis of this. Hello, by the way.
Hello, Joe.
You did an interview with Nathan Murphy and Adrian Barry.
And Adrian Barry, yeah.
Some years ago. And you dropped the bombshell. Your words. I'm addicted to coke.
Yeah. First time I ever met Peter. First time he'd ever come into studio. Where at the big... There was two shocks. One was that News Talk had been sponsoring him for the previous year. And nobody ever bothered to tell us that this was happening. And he didn't say, he teed this up to perfection.
Get those hands off that desk.
Why am I?
It's causing havoc.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's concerning. I'll keep them down here. How did you tee it up? So there must have been a, where did it all go wrong?
Exactly, yeah.
Type conversation. And Peter took a long pause and went, I was addicted to coke. Which if you listen back, you can hear me go.
Car crash.
And then I noticed his face hasn't changed. I'm like, because I've never met him before.
You don't understand the sense of humour.
So I'm like,
oh dear me.
It doesn't look like he. Really?
And again, it's everywhere at the moment.
Yeah. And he had loads of money, so.
And at what stage did he go at cola?
I think I
a good 10 seconds.
Yeah. Great. They were squirming enough, and then I decided to go Coca-Cola.
Well, it made headlines all over the world.
Yes.
Clickbait was alive and well. But today, Peter, the disappointing news
is
that you've walked in here with a bottle of Coca-Cola. See, so I thought you had kicked that.
No,
habit.
Look, I've had a really busy morning. Unfortunately, in Spawa, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining, but we have to pick balls by hand because it's so soft. And we're exceptionally busy.
That is miserable. For the last 3 weeks, he said this last week.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is the worst job in the world.
Yeah.
I can send my kids down though.
I'm going to go and hit a bucket of balls today just for that very reason.
Well, I'll take your 10 euros, no problem.
I'm not paying. I'm
just
going to hit
the
balls. Just throw them out there.
Yeah.
Would you consider an offer whereby you get one free bucket of balls to hit if you go and pick two the next morning?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea actually. But like we ran out of balls last night, so we've been very busy. So it's been good.
Wow!
But did business you run out is of good. This weather, you know the way people say there's always a good and a bad to every kind of news story.
Silver lining, I think.
Silver lining, yeah. So there's a silver lining to the bad weather.
So you back drinking Coca-Cola is just this morning because it was a busy morning. Is that what you're saying to me?
No, I walked in here with a Coke because it was a busy morning. I hadn't had a chance to go get some lunch, so I walked in here with a bar of chocolate, which I hoovered before I actually got up the stairs. Jeez. And I drank the Coke.
You're just a sugar addict. How many bottles of Coke a day?
No, I'd have about 3 Cokes a day.
Cans or bottles?
If I was in work, a bottle, because I sell bottles, I don't sell cans. At home, I'd have cans.
Dear, oh dear.
Like, but you don't even get to enjoy. Like, there's on a warm day, there's nothing as enjoyable as just cracking open a can of Coke.
Or indeed a Pepsi, Champions League partners.
They're great too. Cola.
Ivan likes his Pepsi, doesn't he? Is it?
I love Pepsi right now, by the way.
I'm sure you do.
Does Ivan? He always talks about it. Does he?
He is a terrible Pepsi diet. Max, he's a dreadful diet. I think he's Pepsi Max. So he's. I mean, I think he's all he eats before his dinner in the evening is a Pepsi, a Fulfill bar. And an apple. Sorry, cherry Coke.
Cherry Coke.
I know this from
Pepsi Max.
I don't know Ivan Yates that well, by the way. This was on Living with Lucy.
Right. Right. Wow. And does your wife not be at you the whole time?
You're behaving like a child.
Look, you don't want to live with me if I don't have Coke. Right? I am like a guy are a girl out there who smokes and doesn't have cigarettes in the house.
Mm-hmm.
They get jumpy.
But you do realise if you just kick the habit for a couple of days.
I tried it, doesn't work.
The withdrawal symptoms decline.
The withdrawal symptoms.
Doesn't work after a day, Peter.
No, it knocked me over the edge.
How long did you give it?
Oh, I gave it about 6 months.
No coke for 6 months?
Yeah.
And by going over the edge, you mean like...
I was the worst person in the world to live with.
And you were terrible at golf?
Yes.
How good a person are you to live with coke?
Fabulous, as you can imagine. Look at you drinking your tea with no milk in it.
Because like, I know, I remember Tommy Tiernan went off the drink for I think
a long time, years.
A long time. Years, and, yeah. Well, certainly the joke was, but I think there was probably an element of truth, was that basically his wife said,
go back on it.
Just have a couple.
A bit more crack.
Just like, but lighten up a little bit.
It happens with loads of people when they lose excessive amounts of weight. It's the same thing. Their personality changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't become nice people. And as far as anybody I've met that is heavy. And I'm not pointing at you, by the way.
Well, you're not pointing at him. No. So why are you pointing at
I'm not pointing at anybody.
You literally touched
in the
him.
Building.
You literally touched him.
Yeah, but I was only kind of giving him a bit of coronavirus
believe.
There, you know.
Do you watch Operation Transformation?
Yes, I watched it this year, yeah. Really enjoyed it this year,
so,
actually.
One of the girls on that, I was saying, was addicted to coke. Mm. I mean, that was one of her main issues. And she was getting up. I said to Peter, like, I know you were addicted to coke, but this girl was insane. Like, she was getting up in the middle of the night to have a can of coke. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing.
So is that's not sugar craving, that's just thirst.
I think it's more of a caffeine thing. There's a huge amount of caffeine.
You know, caffeine has no sugar. Or, sorry, coffee has caffeine and no sugar. Be far better for you.
I don't like coffee. I love the smell of coffee, but I actually don't like coffee.
Do you not? Oh, you're a bit goose then.
Yeah.
Would you drink water?
No.
Never. When was the last time you had a glass of water?
I take 2 tablets in the evening and I take a glass of water with them.
Are these diabetes tablets by any chance?
Are the tablets related to the coke?
No, they're not actually.
And so you just not like the taste of water?
No, I just, well, I no think taste. There is no taste.
Right,
just
and that's not enough coke. For you?
No.
And if we got you into Ribena or something?
Not at all, no.
Grand. Listen,
did you ever think of getting Coca-Cola to sponsor you? Was it an easy habit when you were out on tour? Was there a constant supply of free
always.
Coke?
Yeah.
I'd say that's what did you actually.
And funny enough, there was one or two tournaments that didn't have Coke. And I'd go to the...
So the players' tour committee heard all about that. Forget about Simon Dyson for this week.
I go to the goal and find out, where can I get Coke from?
Jeez, if I'd known that now, if you're doing your betting tips when Peter was paying, no, this week, there's no Coca-Cola. Going through the list of sponsors, like, oh no, some Lucozade are sponsoring this week. It's going to be a nightmare for Peter.
Yeah,
dear. I think each can of Coke certainly has more than your daily recommended allowance.
8 or 9 spoons of sugar, yeah.
So you're hitting more. I think your recommended daily allowance is 24 grams, which is, there is more in a can of Coke than 24 grams. So you're having probably 3 to 4 times your recommended amount of sugar. And you've had a bar of chocolate. So you've had about 6 times your recommended allowance of sugar.
I'm trying to intervene. This is a golf podcast. Right?
This ruined your golf career.
It ruined my golf career when I gave it up. This is all about golf. It's got nothing to do with coke.
It's almost never about golf.
My career.
We'll get into golf in a second. Okay. It's just, you walked in here with a bottle of coke and this was a big story in the golfing world.
Yeah. How did your wife know that it was like the main story in Golf Channel? Irish golfer reveals coke addiction.
I remember getting I got a phone call from BBC as well when I was away about it, and then the Golf Channel got it and stuff like that. It just blew out of all proportion. It was crazy.
Yeah. Do you eat vegetables?
Yes. Not many.
Would you eat many bars of chocolate?
No, I've got a I'm very picky in what chocolate I eat.
Mm.
So you don't think it's a sugar?
No. You think it's caffeine?
Because golf, I always find by the time a golf tournament, when we're covering golf tournaments, by the time it gets to Sunday night, I'm a bit like
tired.
I've been eating crap.
Mm.
Just drink.
So when you're at a golf tournament,
yeah.
Oh, it feels like about 3 weeks' work.
Yeah. Right.
Now we're sitting inside for a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's free food and endless coffee. I come home and if I don't have then have 6
That's
cups of coffee.
A bit like my
shop
actually in Swallow.
Yeah. Right, we've got to move on.
We can link this in. You want to go to tweets first? I was going to say, we could link this into the coronavirus story of Lorenzo Galli and Eduardo Molinari.
Go on.
Well, because, so, right, if anyone hasn't heard this, it's interesting,
If you touch this table again.
I can't, I touch this table every day for the last 5 years.
There are people.
And now you're suddenly telling me, don't touch the table.
There are people literally walking down the street now and every few seconds they're having to hold their ears because you've punched the table.
In an hour's time, John Giles is coming in here. John, don't touch the table. Don't touch the table. So they're going to have to get used to it, is all I'm saying. So if you missed this story, I read it on Golf Channel, who hadn't bothered to update it just yet. They have the story. Italians Lorenzo Galli and Eduardo Molinari have withdrawn from the Oman Open amid reports they're being isolated to determine if they have the virus spreading in Europe. Galli tells Italian newspaper La Nazione that a European tour doctor told him at breakfast on Wednesday to return to his room Molinari, his roommate for the week in Oman, was moved to another room. Galli said he was given a test and told the result would be available in 2 days, but he would have to remain in the room until next Wednesday, a week.
Mm.
Meaning he would also have to withdraw from the Qatar Masters the following week. It's inexplicable, said Galli. Only us two have been excluded from the tournament. But I arrived in Muscat last Sunday, and over the last few days I've worked out in the gym with dozens of other players. I ate with them and I travelled by bus with them. If there's a risk of contagion, they'll have to isolate dozens of golfers and cancel the tournament. The European Tour said it was on medical grounds, couldn't comment because of patient confidentiality. It's since turned out that Lorenzo Galli tested negative for coronavirus, and that even though they've withdrawn, they made an exception and let both himself and Eduardo Molinari back into the tournament in, I'd imagine, a pairing. They were the last two out. Can't imagine even still there was too many saying I'll follow these two. But I was saying to Joe off air, I was a bit surprised considering Lorenzo Galli, particularly Eduardo Molinari, he's played Ryder Cups, had a good career, that they were sharing a room together. And he reminded me that you did share a room with Damien McGrain.
Yeah.
At what stage did you stop sharing a room?
We never stopped. It's company.
At no stage would he not get annoyed with you at 3 a.m. getting up for a can of Coke.
I'd rarely do that. I'd be asleep. But look, it's company. Life on tour is just, it's not as if you're, you know what I mean, you're away on a business trip and you know, you want your own space and stuff like that. You're there over a kind of a 5 day period, and it's sort of 5 days out of the seven, and you know, on a week to week basis, and you need a bit of company.
Mm. Would it be commonplace for players to share?
Yes and no, you know.
Certainly not unheard of.
Certainly not unheard of, no.
Even very wealthy people. This is not about the money.
No.
This is not about saving money on a room. For the more, like for you and Damien, was it? Was money a part of it?
No, it was nothing to do with the money, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It was more a case of, you know, if I'm totally honest... I got to a stage, or we got to a stage where we were nearly going to go on separate rooms, and then, you know, a few things happened, and Damien was going through a bit of a messy separation, and so I just said, look, this guy needs support. You know, he needs company, he needs support, and we just left it at that, and then we never turned back, and if any of us got a free room for the week, like when we won. In 2008, one of us would have been offered a room the following year, and we probably gave it to either the caddies who were caddying for us, so they'd share it together, or either his parents were coming out or somebody that was with me was coming out, and we'd still share. So it was just a case of that's what we were used to, and a lot of guys would be like that on tour. Now some guys wouldn't share, no chance.
Nice to meet you.
Exactly. But like, you look at Porrick and Ronan, you know, player caddy, they share.
Do they?
Yeah. So, God. Like, it's not
that's
a case
that
of...
That is intense. That's intense. At least you got a break from Damien for 6 hours.
Oh, yeah. You needed a break too.
Like, you know, Harrington likes to make the point at 7 o'clock in the evening, the player caddy relationship ended.
Yeah.
But he sharing a room.
Mm.
Like, who's paying for the room?
Well, it Porrick. Would be a freebie. Yeah.
Oh, it's a freebie. I was 3-time major winner.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's kind of sweet. You and Damien must know each other better than you know almost anyone else outside of your partners.
I do, yeah. But like anything, we're still exceptionally friendly. But we were, you know, up to that week, that's all we'd be together, and then after that, we'd hardly talk.
Well, that's understandable. Do you think it helped you?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. As I said to you, it's. Sometimes you need a sounding board. Sometimes you need, you know, and it kind of got you into a bit of a regime of, right, it's lights out, let's go to bed. Do you know what I mean? It's not a case of...
I'll sit up watching TV till 2 a.m.
Correct, yeah. Or watching Netflix or something like that. Do you know what I mean? And you're up for hours.
And so what would jump out at me straight away would be, you've got a lunchtime tea time, he's up at 4 a.m.
No problem. You just... I would, he and myself and himself would, you'd leave the room quietly, you know, you'd have your stuff ready for the next morning and away you go.
Okay, there you go.
Was there any situation whereby your wife was coming over to watch you play and you said, you can have the other room?
No,
me and Damien are gonna just stay sharing, I'm comfortable with this.
No.
I didn't know what you were gonna say there. Right, we need to move on
move on from that one.
So, look, the big news this week for Golf Weekly listeners, for friends of the pod, is that Fionn made it to the Nona Blue Modern Tavern, to give it its full name. The Modern Tavern, Nona Blue. Colin Farrington, I can't wait for the pod this week. Oh, no, sorry, that's a different point. Yeah, I'll come back to that.
You can't wait for the pod, though, is the main takeaway.
Well, he says, I'm sure everyone's delighted for Patrick Reed. Well, given that we weren't even delighted for Adam Scott, the world's nicest man, last week, I don't even know what treatment for old Patrick Reed is going to get this week. But anyway, Fergal Favier, bit stingy with the sauce, GMAC, because Fionn had a picture of the burgers up.
And great photographers, Fionn.
Very good. Ivor O'Sullivan, brilliant Fionn, living the dream. Nona Blue is living the dream. Cahers wanted to know if there were any cold beers on the go. Gary Harkin, did you try the stout? No replies from Fionn yet, but he looked very, very happy to be there. Colin Farrington, as I said, can't wait for the pod this week. I'm sure everyone's delighted for Patrick Reed. Emmett Kane, fresh morning at Spawell Golf, working on the game while pretending to be at site meetings. He did tweet this, by the way.
Good man.
Peter Laurie is downstairs eating a bacon butty. Your lifestyle.
It wasn't a bacon butty. He's wrong there.
It gets worse by the minute.
Hello?
Many of the guys would say friend of the pot and they'd get a bit of discount.
Emmett Kane was there. Saw you eating a bacon butty. I'm taking his word for it. And sipping a Coke, I presume.
More than likely.
Willie Lawler. Is anchoring of the forearm a la Kuchar and Bryson not more questionable than Adam Scott's long putter? Peter Laurie, he wants to know.
I would say similar to.
Yeah. D Hill sent us a nice picture of him playing Dunfanaghy and Rosapenna on his midterm break video of it. Lovely tracks. Wanted you to analyse his swing.
Yeah, he needs to work on the follow through there big time.
Oh, you did have a look.
Oh, absolutely.
And if he's sitting there going, what does work on the follow through mean?
He cuts it. He's playing into a strong breeze, or it looks like it's really windy.
It was this week.
Rosapenna, I'd say. It's guaranteed.
He should get the feeling of it, of extending the follow through rather than cutting it short. And follow through, I mean, is extending his arms through the ball rather than he comes up out of it pretty quickly.
Okay.
So he can get the feeling of, I suppose, if he got an old tire or something that he could push against and get the feeling of his left and his right arm together going outwards rather than flicking at it a bit on the follow through.
There you go, D Hill. Free lesson, although take this man's advice with caution. I'm just kidding. That's brilliant. Free lesson, good on you.
Say nothing.
Andy Creevy, Patrick Reed in the sand. I can't stand the praise the commentary are giving him. That was during the tournament in Mexico. Donal O'Hagan, the hurlers on the ditch, I presume that's us, who analysed Rory's putting, will have a field day picking apart round two in Mexico, I'm sure. Arthur McMillan, by the way, said, lads, I recall Sam Torrance being amongst the first to use Wilson's broom handle putter in the early 90s. Although he does say, you are right, read Johnny Miller for the PGA Tour. It seems Miller was about the first on the PGA Tour.
Sam Torrance won the Irish Open in Mount Juliet with the long putter.
And not to reopen that debate, when Torrance and the boys started winning with long putters back in the 90s, were there grumblings on tour then, do we think, or in the wider golf community? I'm too young to remember. Or was it kind of okay.
Not that I remember.
Not the way there is now.
No.
Grant. Okay, let's get stuck into busy week in golf. Patrick Reed has won his second WGC, just 98 putts for the week on Poana. Bryson, meanwhile, had three putts on the Sunday. Here is Patrick Reed, he was talking afterwards in the press conference. And obviously, they all want to try and hint at the controversy and ask him questions. So here's Patrick Reed.
Patrick, given some of the things that were said earlier this week, did you feel like you had something to prove this week?
Yeah, I felt like I had something to prove to myself coming into this week, because I felt like I've been playing some really solid golf and just haven't quite gotten over that hump to get the W, you know, with losing in a playoff. And then, you know, to feel like I played some solid golf at Torrey. But then, you know, coming into this week, I knew we were in good pattern, and you know, I knew all I needed to do was, you know, continue to try to improve on my golf game, but at the same time, just block out all the noise, you know, no matter what it was. And I feel like I've been able to do that really well throughout my career, you know, and growing up, I've always been able to just kind of, when I get inside the ropes or on the golf course, just focus on what I need to do, and that's play golf. And, you know, it's just, it's always satisfying to come out and, you know, especially in a World Golf Championship and to be able to win, especially with how poorly I felt like I played last Sunday last year at this point.
Good Doug right here.
Two things before we get to the golf. Do you like it when you feel like the world's against you?
I'm used to it. I mean, it doesn't, you know, honestly, it's one of those things that at the end of the day, all I can control is me and what I do on and off the golf course. And if I feel like I'm improving each day on and off the golf course and setting a good example for, you know, the next generation coming up, the children as well as my own children, then that's all I can do. And, you know, I feel like I've been doing a good job of that. And I feel like I've been growing as a person and as a golfer. And, you know, that's all I can really do.
I mean, I don't want to excuse him of all the various misdemeanors and issues, but it is quite sad when someone has to say, I'm used to the world being against me, I thought. He's 29 years of age. We're all products of our environment to some extent or other. It seems like he's had, I don't want to say a strange upbringing, I don't know enough about it, but the family situation isn't good, so who knows what went on. And his family were more than happy to go public with the whole thing, so I don't know. That made me question them a little bit. But it is quite a sad thought for someone to say, I'm used to the world being against me.
Obviously his father had never said cheaters never win, right, you know, there. And that's what it is, and it just, it's...
Do you think you're too empathetic at times?
No. Definitely not.
Well, your face, Nathan Murphy, said the same thing, really. Sodom.
Well, sorry, not Sodom, but you have to take some sort of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, there is that level of empathy that when somebody is put in a position, almost no matter what they've done, you find yourself with a little bit of sympathy towards them, going, maybe we should give them a break.
Yeah.
But then they keep doing it. Like, the list is stacked up. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a reason that the world has been against them. Like, the world gave him a chance.
Yeah.
You know, from what you read of his initial upbringing, he was, you know, he was given a chance. Mm. I don't know what, like, the family side of it is the one part where I don't think any of us are totally clear.
Yeah.
But everything we've read and everything we've seen suggests he hasn't conducted himself well as a serious golfer. And you got to pay the price. The one part you might have some sympathy is that he's not the only one, but it's definitely a nice situation for the rest of the golfers where everyone's just crowding around him and they can basically do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. Interestingly, Paul Azinger on the TV coverage in the States on the Saturday picked Reed out of everybody to push through and win. Like, on Saturday, you felt McIlroy would be in with a big chance. DeChambeau was there, a few others were there, and it was Reed who came through. Like, it was actually a brilliant win, brilliant performance. I like that golf course too. I know it's a bit insane how far they can hit the ball in the altitude, but there is enough jeopardy there. It's narrow enough to punish bad drives as well. You can find yourself in some nasty spots, and players do. So there is a risk reward element to some of these audacious drives they take on.
Oh yeah, it was mayhem, wasn't it, on the back nine on Sunday?
Yeah,
like everybody was, you know, couldn't get it near a fairway or a green.
There was one spell where every tee shot went left. I don't know what was going on, but all the leaders just had pressure off the tee and felt it.
And they seemed to be hacking out of the trees and, you know, hitting it 220 yards like a chip and run shot. Mm. You know, Reed did play tactically very well.
How good is he?
To be honest with you, you know, and I said this to you on the text message, I think...
What text message? Did you text me?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Okay. When? We did about Patrick Reed when we were going to talk about what we were going to talk about today.
How much coke have you had?
Quite a lot. I actually...
I didn't get that. Did I text you?
Yeah, you texted me back too. I actually think that the press and the should just ignore him. Just ignore his results.
That's never going to happen.
Ignore.
But that's not right. You have to report on what's happened.
No, I think they'd be better off to go, Patrick Reed won.
Who are the press to do that?
Yeah, but also, sorry, the press are not the problem here.
Oh, no,
Because the USPGA ignored him. The media, like the US, but if there's an issue here, it should have been on the USPGA. Or on the PGA Tour.
What? I'm not saying the press did anything wrong, right? But what, in a result of them doing nothing, there has to be a stand taken against what is going on. And the PGA Tour are going to do nothing about it. The European Tour are tweeting about it, which I was disgusted with, to be honest with you. And does nobody realise that this is just wrong? Plain and simple.
Who are the press to make that judgment, though? Because when the next guy comes along, where do you draw the line between, you know, does he get the retreatment or not? If you set that precedent, that's a very serious thing to do.
I would agree with you. You're probably right, yeah.
Even from the European Tour's point of view, the tweeting out. So it's a European Tour co-sanctioned event. They're always going to tweet out some things about the winner. It's not quite the PGA Tour when he was down in Australia.
Digging. Yeah.
Like, it's not at that level. But it's almost impossible to decide where your morals lie.
Mm-hmm.
My hand lies right here, which is...
Yeah, just don't bang it. Right, it lies there.
But, like, so... He was punished, didn't receive much of a punishment at the time, but
yeah.
Like, can the European Tour, like, where does that stop?
Is it the
social media guy in the
here?
European Tour who goes, well, I'm not comfortable with, you know, I'm not going to show Tiger Woods, but I think back to some of the things he was doing in his past. Morally, for me, I'm a staunch Catholic. I could never stand for such things.
I suppose I just see things very black and white.
What?
Yeah,
you?
And, yeah.
I think you're all nuance. Where would that end? When do you report on Patrick Reed, who's won the next 10 tournaments in a row? When do you stop? When do you give a break?
Do you know, I was thinking about this, and you look at Lance Armstrong, right, who actually did an interview here, didn't he?
He did.
And it was an amazing interview, to be fair. But eventually he was caught. Everybody knew he was cheating, and eventually he was caught, and properly caught. And I think this is what will happen eventually to somebody who has numerous times... bended the rules to his advantage.
He would be very stupid. Now, as you say, there's no real pattern of him learning from his previous mistakes so far, but I know you touched on Peter Costas last week, where he's talking about 3 or 4 infringements that he thinks he's seen. Surely every time Patrick Reed is in a bunker now, the cameras are going to be on him.
Zoomed in, I would think.
That for him...
But did you see, it was up on Twitter there, did you see where he replaced his ball on the green? They had, this guy had zoomed in. Now, that's just one of them, but they also put up the YouTube video of the Peter Costas comment of
Barclays.
When he did, you know, as Peter Costas said, the lie I saw, there was no way he'd hit 3 wood out of. And he ended up hitting 3 wood out of.
Like replacing the ball, I saw the slow. I don't know if you saw this. So he's, it's not like Brady picks up, puts down his marker, and he slides the marker as you do. Is it, do most golfers not do this? Slides the marker pretty much right under the ball.
Yeah.
Lifts the ball up, but then puts the ball back, just in front of the marker.
Whoa!
It's like,
that's not good.
But if you were to slow down every single
how far in front of the marker does he put?
I would say you're no. It's, I would say you're looking, talking millimeters. No?
You were talking.
But what I'm wondering is, so because it's Patrick Reed, it's been zoomed in, it's been slowed down. If you were to look at every single golfer who was in the top 10, and could you guarantee the other 9 didn't do something similar?
Could you stand over every time you've replaced a ball in competition? You could.
100%.
Yeah.
Because I know where I would put the marker.
You have a routine.
And I would know where to put it back.
Okay, fair enough. Look, it's obviously in him. When he's in the moment, I don't think he sets out on a morning to cheat. I don't think he wakes up and says, I'm going to try and cheat here. But obviously in the moment, on certain occasions, maybe, arguably, and he denies this, but his judgment, it gets the better of him. And he's just so in it to win it that he does silly things. Now, you could very easily turn around to me and says, well, he needs to wake up in the morning and say, I am under no circumstances going to cheat. You know, I will never have my integrity questioned again. That ball marking issue, that's just from this week, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to be really careful. Because the next time there's an issue, the PGA Tour will have no choice but to come down on him like a ton of bricks. They'll have to give him a 6-month suspension.
Yeah, but what gets me is the celebrations at the end with Bryson DeChambeau, you know, congratulating him.
Yeah. Oh, well, Bryson would feel he's probably number 2 on the list of hard done by.
Bryson used the phrase that, you know, he's one of my colleagues out here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is, there's a large part of that of when you're on tour, you're on tour, and we all stick together because, well, it could be us.
But I'm surprised if you're Bryson and you finish second to him, you might be thinking, well, has he... Oh,
but he made a point of it. It was like he strode across the green to be... Yeah. You know, you're my boy.
He pushed Radar out of the way, practically.
Like, what did Radar say to him? I missed that part of the interview.
So, I mean, Sky were there and did a really good job, and it was Nick Daugherty and Paul McGinley doing the analysis. And this was not, for instance, do you remember BT when Billy Vunipola had said the anti-LGBTQ things, and then BT when Billy Vunipola had a man of the match performance against Munster? You know, it was like redemption for Billy Vunipola.
It's a tough
kind of
week.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's answered his critics, all that kind of stuff. You know, redemption, all that stuff. Sky did not do that, in my opinion. Like, Nick, one of the first things he said to McGinley was, there is a cloud over this guy, you know? But then they went to Radar, who was Greenside, and interviewed him. And I think the final question was, you know, Radar has that way about him. He says, you're known as the shush man in the Ryder Cups. Do you feel like you've silenced your critics this week? And Reid gave the answer. But there was a flicker in Reid's eyes of, oh, I know what you mean by all this. So you're bringing this up too. And then, you know, sometimes it's a bit messy in a live broadcast, so the camera kind of half turns around to follow Reid, and he audibly turns to Radar and says, way to get that question in, man. Or way to ask that question,
right?
You know. And then Radar was about to respond, but Bryson turned up on the scene and almost half pushed him out of the way. You're like, woo, you know, congrats, and what a run, man, and all this stuff. And then at that stage, Reid sort of half looked at Radar and kind of kept going, walked off with DeChambeau. Now, I've heard Wayne Riley, I should give him his real name, I don't know him, Radar. He's been speaking since, and he said that his interpretation of Reid saying that was more of a friendly, geez, fair play to you. You found a way to ask the tough question, because he says he has a very good relationship with Reid. So it was almost like a, you got me a little bit. But I read it as a bit spikier than that, to be honest, from afar. But that's the story there.
I'd be very surprised if Wayne, and knowing Wayne,
he knows him and he calls him Wayne,
would have anything other than disdain for anybody who cheated on tour. But I'll stand corrected.
Well, he said that on the Sky Sports podcast this week, that there's no issue and he gets on very well with Reid. It did strike me that if you do Wayne Riley's job, then you need to maintain a very good relationship with all of these players who you will be interviewing at a future point. So I wasn't surprised to see him. He didn't go the Peter Costas route here.
Right.
Smoother things over and they can work together again in future.
Yeah. Well, otherwise, if Wayne is doing, you know, 18th green interviews, correct, like, no player is going to go to him.
Yeah.
Oh, well, but that's a simple Patrick Reid goes to the tour and says, I don't want this guy doing the post round interviews.
Well, wasn't it extraordinary in the Costas interview that because he wouldn't mention the FedEx points on the 18th, they got somebody else to do those interviews? That was the thing I was most taken aback by in the whole thing. Anyway, does any part of you admire Reid's ability to block out all this noise, all this criticism, fellow tour pros, and to actually win and to put himself in the firing line again? Because I think it would be very understandable, and I've wondered if I was in that scenario, very understandable if consciously or otherwise, you would say to yourself, I'm just going to lay low for a while. I'm not going to draw attention to myself. That includes winning and almost self-sabotage, finish 20th, get a couple of months under your belt before you re-emerge into the glare. Mm. Whereas this lad
is in it all the time.
Forced his way back into the spotlight. Forced us to have conversations about him again this week. Yeah, now, for different reasons. But you know what I mean? It came up again. People are now saying he should have been banned. He shouldn't be playing.
You have to admire. I remember talking to a few golf psychologists throughout my career. And, you know, one or two of them would be very much of, when you either put on your shoes or when the door of the courtesy car closes, that's you. You're in your bubble and nothing can get you out of that. You know, you're there to play golf and that's it. And you would have to admire that on Patrick Reid, the way he, you know, is able to block everything out and carry on playing the way he did. Mm. And, you know, he mentally, he must be exceptionally strong to be able to do that, and exceptionally strong to get it around the golf course and hold the putts and do everything that he did to win that tournament. But when he looks back on it, who knows how he'll feel.
Well, we spoke about this at the start of the year with Shane Ryan. Possibly when Reid had just been beaten in the playoff at the
Hawaii
Tournament of Champions.
Shouted cheese at him in Hawaii, yeah.
Yeah, was that in the playoff?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I had gone with the this won't bother him route. That there clearly is. So maybe you're right. Maybe he's just brilliant at putting himself in the bubble, or maybe he's just totally wired differently, and he's getting off on all this. that something about him, like, it brings the best out of him, that there's this level of criticism, they proving a point, like, whereas it would break 99.99% of people.
The same thing happened at the Masters, though, did it not? When his family was brought into it, as interviewed, your man watched the golf, didn't he, with the family at the end, Alan Patrick Reed.
That was interesting. Doug Ferguson in the press conference asked him there, do you like the world being against you? That was an opportunity for him to go, yeah, I do. He actually said, I'm used to it, which is a different point. I don't think anybody could like this.
Well, there's nothing to suggest that it's affecting him negatively.
Yeah, I'd like to see behind closed doors.
Maybe if we were in a situation whereby we had fallen out with all our immediate family and hadn't spoken to them for several years and had been through that in the public eye.
Yeah.
Maybe something like this is actually small fry.
By comparison, Brooks Koepka, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Maybe that is exactly what he's thinking. But like, it's only going to get tougher because it feels as though, because one or two have started to criticise. So was it Cameron Smith, who initially was one of the few who came out and was very critical?
Yeah.
Like, Koepka's now had a real pop at him.
Mm.
It's going to come up to the Masters. It's only 2 years since he won it. It's going to be this constant question, especially around the Masters
and
all that is sacred. Like, is this somebody we want wearing the green jacket? We weren't sure of him to start with. We gave him a sort of muted applause when he won. And look what he's done. Masters champion.
Could the Masters not invite him?
No, of course.
How about that?
They couldn't do it. Well, they could, but they won't.
His record, when you look at it, so 8 victories. 7 of them by 1 stroke or less. The other one by 2 strokes.
That's
a
impressive.
Couple of playoffs.
Yeah, it's a good season.
1 stroke. Like, when it comes to grinding it out,
and the pressure's on,
he does it.
He does it,
Like, he's already got a Hall of Fame career if he was liked. 8 wins, the Masters, he'd be in.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
So, Rory McIlroy, just to touch on Rory, so he finished 5th. I mean, he started this thing on Thursday and I thought, this is the week. It can't be stopped this week. And he was in 3rd gear for the next 3 nights. But he still finished 5th. So that's 3rd, 5th, 5th in his 3 PGA Tour outings. He's going to be back next week at the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill. He'll play the Players at Sawgrass. Then he'll play the Match Play, the WGC, 2 weeks after that. And then the Valero Texas Open is his run-up to the Masters. He said of this week, I don't feel I got the best out of myself. I hit some loose shots and I didn't putt as well as I needed to. I just let a few shots get away. So again with Rory, it's the same thing. He's playing exceptionally well. He is, you know, top 5 finish, can't really fault it. Yeah, I'm less inclined than in comparison with Riviera to say this is a week he let get away from. I don't think he had his best stuff across 3 days. I think he was grinding.
He had his best stuff on Thursday.
For sure.
And the greens were a whole lot slower on Thursday in comparison to what they were Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
And Friday he kind of got a little bit spooked, it looked like, on TV. With the putter, and then after that he putted poorly, even for his standards. Some of the putts that he hit were, he was way out in pace. Like, I think he hit a putt maybe around the 13th or 14th, and he must have hit it nearly twice as far past the hole than where he started from. So he didn't look comfortable. He looked very comfortable on Thursday. I thought, wow, he's going to run away with this one on Thursday.
Yeah.
But then hit it, as you said, into kind of second gear for the rest of the week. Yeah.
Should he be at a stage, maybe players never get to this stage, should he be at a stage where he doesn't get spooked? Because things are never going to go flawlessly on the greens for 72 holes.
He seemed to get spooked by the speed more than anything else. Look, that happens. You know what I mean? You get used to a certain speed, and then all of a sudden, you know, oh geez, I better not hit this one too hard. You know, you know, and then you start reading into it, and then you have to overread the greens because you're hitting it at a certain pace. So he kind of got confused.
It does mean he stays at world number one. He's now 98 weeks at world number one, age 30. This puts him 3rd on the overall list, which is extraordinary. So he's behind Greg Norman and Tiger Woods. Norman had 331 weeks to Rory's 98, and Woods had 683 weeks, which will just never be caught, I presume. McIlroy's longest stretch was in 2014 when he was 54 weeks as world number one. But 98 weeks, it just got me looking at Norman's career. There's not parallels with him and Rory, but in terms of like major wins, you feel Norman should have won more. Maybe there are parallels at this point in Rory's career, maybe not when he finishes. 88 professional tournaments, 20 PGA Tour wins two majors, so the Open in 86 and 93. He had 30 top 10 finishes in majors. 30 top 10 finishes. Mm. And he finished runner-up eight times, Norman. Like, 96, obviously, is the famous one with Faldo. But even in 1986, when he won the Open, he led all four majors after three rounds.
Yeah.
He had a four-shot lead in the PGA Championship that year and closed with a 76. You know? The 87 Masters, Larry Mize. It's just like...
Yeah, A's and holding out of the bunker to beat him.
What was the feeling on tour about Norman? Like, what was missing?
I wasn't there. It's too
Did you ever talk
ago.
About him? Did you ever ask
No,
the old
but
guys?
What? Well, he played one or two tournaments that I played in just at the end of his career. But one thing I would say about Norman and McIlroy, who I would say are very similar in certain ways, was both of them were brilliant drivers of the ball. They were better than anybody of their ilk at the time.
Mm.
And it sets them up, like we all say, you know, you drive for show, you put for dough. Completely wrong.
The stats disprove that, by the way.
Exactly, yeah. Both of them were number ones because they drove the ball so well. And they drove it far and straight. They just didn't, you know, smash it out there a bit like Mickelson, you know, all over the shop.
Mm.
But both of them struggled with the putter. They weren't the best putters. They could do every other part of the game, but putting was their Achilles heel. And that would be the comparison. But both of them were smashing golfers. They really were. Like, if you ever, I always thought when I was a kid growing up, I'd love to be able to drive the ball like, you know, Greg Norman. I kind of, that was the person that I looked at the most. And then when Adam Scott came out and Tiger, both of them drove the ball brilliantly. The same thing, that kind of a swing. And I think that's what you need to do. You need to be a brilliant driver of the ball to do well at this game. The rest looks after itself.
Just when I was looking at those stats, I read a piece about Norman which said he lacked heart, and that struck me as kind of a convenient, easy thing to say, like heart, resilience, whatever word you want to put in it.
Yeah. Which is also criticism that would be made of Rory at times.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, if you look at Norman, an awful lot of players did extraordinary things to beat Greg Norman, and I mean extraordinary things. You know, you look at Bay Hill, Robert Gamez holing out with a 7-iron to beat Norman, Azinger holing out from the bunker, Larry Mize holing a shot, and you can go on and on. You know, it didn't seem to happen to any other player other than Greg Norman.
It's amazing for a guy who loved America so much, thrived in America. He never won a major in American soil.
Yeah, incredible.
Victor Hovland.
Oh,
we should mention this guy. Yeah. This guy's great. So the first Norwegian to win on the PGA Tour, won in Puerto Rico with a mammoth putt. So, like, Norwegian TV was kind of as happy as you would expect Norwegian TV to be. So here he is about to hit the winning putt.
Petter for Norges. Første PGA Tour seier Victor Hovland.
Great, isn't it?
Norwegians have very nice laughs, don't they?
Yeah.
That's Maggie Thatcher. Your boys have taken one hell of a beating. That was Norwegian TV as well, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. Yeah. Turned professional last year. He won the 2018 US Amateur. He was the low amateur at the Masters, 32nd. Really burst on the scene at Pebble at the US Open last year, finished 12th. And now first win. Even though his short game sucks, according to himself. He can't chip the ball, he basically says. He had lots of terrible chips.
Did
but everything else good.
He duffed in front of him, yeah.
Yeah, the 11th.
Yeah.
He duffed the ball twice at one hole.
Yeah.
And then.
Triple bogey.
He got lucky on the 15th when it rolled in. Golf Digest already did an analysis of his chipping, which you can kind of say yay or nay to. So they had Kevin Weeks, who's a short game coach. He was saying that he uses the same technique every time, which is the issue. He's a one dimensional. So the one he held on 15 was nice, fluffy grass. So he said he just made enough of a swing in that one, so it landed and rolled out. You can get away with moving up and backwards like he does when the lie is fluffy, but it won't work on the term, on the firm, tight lies. And that's what he said happened on 11, that he got the leading edge into the ground. And he hangs back a bit on his chips. Yeah. So it's amazing he hasn't quite figured that out. It seemed quite basic to me.
Chipping is all about imagination. And if you don't have imagination, you're always going to struggle.
Because you can't use the same technique all, you know, fluffy lie and firm lie. Like, no. You've got to really approach it differently.
Yeah.
But they're already saying this guy has real chance of making the Ryder Cup team. Harrington was over to him at the Honda, where Harrington's back this week, and said his hellos. So,
well, he had to win probably that tournament of any chance of making the Ryder Cup team. You can't see Harrington pick him as a wild card. Unless he was going a ridiculous run the few weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
But to get into all the tournaments he needs to get into, he needed to get that sort of exemption.
I think you're going to see Harrington's picks very much statistically speaking. I think he will go with not probably the person who has the most money or the points, you know, going down the list. I think he will break it, his statistics down, and he'll go with probably statistically that he thinks is going to perform that week. So I wouldn't say no in picking him.
What a smile, Victor Hovland.
Oh yeah,
a Ryder Cup smile.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. He is going to be a superstar.
It does feel like it's going to be a bit of a changing of the guard.
But he seems to be going to be a nice superstar.
Oh yeah, like a charismatic,
proper nice guy. Phil Mickelson.
But nice. Is that what you're about to say?
No. I like Phil Mickelson. Right, okay. Phil is a nice guy.
Sorry, I was thinking of someone else.
Wow.
So, incredibly charismatic. Just smiley. Did you see when he had the bobblehead last year? There was a bobblehead Victor Hovland, and the camera zoomed out, and then Victor Hovland was beside the bobblehead doing the same thing.
Didn't see that.
Yeah, no, I really like him. So that's his first win. Honda Classic then. Brooks Koepka, the favourite. Tommy Fleetwood is there as well. Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler. And then, to be honest, well, Billy Horschel, Louis Westhuizen, but then we're into Daniel Berger territory. So it's not an outstanding field. Brooks is the only one of the world's top 10 there. Lowry is there at 33s. Harrington, former champion. We remember the playoff on that Monday, is also there. Brooks Koepka, though, likes to look at that Saudi money, I think. He said, I'm just going to play wherever the best players play, simple as. I'm going to play against the best and I'll play wherever they are. And he said he repeated that several times over.
He plays in Honda.
Well, yeah. But so he certainly didn't, you know, do you want to join Rory McIlroy in shutting this thing down?
Yes.
No.
No.
No, but then he said, so what if they make him a huge offer to be one of the team owners? He said, I know you're going to write this the wrong way, but it doesn't matter if somebody gave me $200 million tomorrow. It's not going to change my life. What am I going to get out of it? I've already said so much that I've already have so much I could retire right now, but I don't want to. I just want to play golf. It's not going to change anything. Maybe I'd buy a plane. That'd be it. I don't see anything that would change my life.
Oh, I didn't see that. Apologies then. I've actually misconstrued what he said.
Sorry, I had taken from it that he had sort of cut it off at the knees.
Okay.
That this wasn't...
You have to have a lot of money to have an aeroplane.
To be fair to Koepka,
he has,
you know, stayed back from all the endorsement offers for clubs to play with the clubs that suit him best. So maybe I have done him a disservice there. And actually what he's saying is, I'll go wherever the best competition is, but I'm not going to drive us towards it.
Yeah,
is
he said he was asked about the PGA Tour and he said he doesn't take it for granted. A lot of good things have come from it. The tour has been incredible for us, the way things have developed over the last few years. We have to see where it's going. It's all very new. It's all happening very fast.
Okay. It's definitely not dead in the water. I was listening to his coach, son of...
Claude.
Yeah, Claude definitely seemed to... He was done on Sky Sports, the golf podcast, and seemed to be saying this thing is, you know, maybe it's good to have the best players in the world together and, you know, maybe... Boom.
Yeah, like maybe what comes out of this is some sort of Saudi swing where you have a...
I couldn't deal with that.
Where you have a four-week period where the best 48 players come together.
To be
honest, the problem with golf is not the elite. The problem with golf is the level just below.
Correct, yeah.
The elite.
Yeah.
That's... Like, where are the next stars coming from?
Mm.
It does feel as though like the biggest selling points for this would be Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. Who in 5 years' time are not going to be playing good golf.
Yeah. Like, I do wonder, would the PGA Tour just try and continue, and then when a Victor Hovland emerges, Premier League golf just go, Victor, come join the big boys now?
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't think it'll happen. I think they'll get to a stage where They have a few players maybe, you know, initially half signed up. But I can't see it happening.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can't have this conversation for too long every week, so we'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah.
So Brooks there saying...
Live on Golf Weekly, it's Premier League Golf.
Well, if it does start, can we get in as the official podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Then I think it'd be a very worthwhile venture, I mean.
Absolutely.
We all want to see the best players together.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Screw the little guy.
Oh, dear. By the way, were you kicking the cable there?
What cable?
I think you were tapping the table.
Why am I getting it in the neck? It could easily be you.
Here, no, it's not me. I'm in my ears.
Have some Coca-Cola. You'd be grand after a while.
You managed to get through the full pod without having.
Yeah, well, I thought I better not take even a sip of it.
Pepsi Max is my only interest.
Well, it's the only one, of course. So we're done. It's Bay Hill this week, and then it's the Arnold Palmer the following week, and Masters is starting to feel very close.
No, it's Honda this week and Bay Hill next week.
What did I say?
You said Bay Hill this week.
And then the Arnold Palmer.
Okay, the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill the following week.
So this week's at the Bears Club?
The Bear, yeah.
Yeah. Water on 17, isn't it? Where...
So Rory practices there but isn't playing this week. Mm-hmm. Shane Lowry's been practicing there for the last couple of weeks. Could be a...
Maybe.
I
don't know.
I think he has been.
Yeah.
And Connor Moore, just before we finish.
Well, this is disgusting.
So you might remember last year when he turned up for our podcast. We paid him all that money to turn up for our live podcast at Power Score, and he told this great story of what a great man Jack Nicklaus was.
I think, just in case there are some listeners who didn't pick up on your tone, he turned up and gave his time for zilch.
Oh yeah.
To be fair, he just came.
Sorry, that was my sarcastic tone.
I just know 10% of people going, "Jeez, did they pay him?"
Ask Connor Moore.
Yeah. Sometimes tone doesn't work for people.
Tell the audience they don't pay.
Yeah. Nobody gets paid.
Nobody gets paid for this. Oh, no matter how big a star you are, you do not get paid.
No.
So don't send that invoice, McGinley. It's not happening. Bloody hell. So he told this great story of how he was at an event, ended up chatting to Jack. That Jack was his father's hero growing up, told Jack this, and next thing a letter. Wasn't that it? A letter arrives.
If you bang this table one more time.
I'm not banging the table.
You literally just went boom, letter. Yeah, you're worse than any guest. You're worse than any guest.
Do you know?
I think a flag arrived, or was it a letter?
A letter.
Saying, your boy's done all right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, anyways, there's a dinner on this week because of the Honda at the Bears Club. Connor is there, presumably entertaining the masses. Hopefully getting paid for it this time around. And says, any chance you can bring my dad along? Jack says, yeah, no problem. No problem at all. And puts Connor and his father sitting beside him at the top table.
Mr. Moore sat beside Jack Nicklaus for dinner.
It's a shocker.
That's a classy touch.
Oh,
one of my deepest regrets in golf is I played in a charity event in Lutterstown Castle. Jack Nicklaus was there, Cecil Whelan from the Lynx. Unfortunately, he's dead now, God rest his soul. But he had Cecil and Jack's wife, Barbara, isn't it? He was at the table beside me, and I didn't have the balls enough to go over and say hello.
Oh, no. Bad choice,
that
Peter.
Just a shocker, wasn't it?
And you were a professional at this stage?
I had just turned pro.
The advice
imagine the advice
you.
And the thing. I couldn't get me. You know the way you just couldn't get myself to go across.
I would love you telling Jack Nicklaus that you drink 8 cans of Coke a day.
No, the worst player would be Gary Player. He'd kill you.
Oh, if this podcast ever takes off properly and we get Gary Player on, we are putting you in front of Gary Player.
What do you mean takes off properly? Years ago.
Sorry. Well, Driscoll spends a lot of time with Gary Player, doesn't he? Maybe we could pass on the message.
It's the HSBC.
What advice would you give to
Peter Lawrie? Jack Nicklaus. I'm not saying he's intimidating, but I'd say he doesn't suffer fools. So I can see how it might be slightly. Oh, will I go up? Will I not go up?
That's the way. Will I go? Will I not? And I'm sitting there and I'm going, "Come on, Peter, you have to go. You have to go." And I just could not get myself to go over. Hello, Mr. Nicklaus.
It's different.
How are you?
He would have liked to hear from a fellow pro. I mean, me and Nathan going up to him is a different story, you know? But a young player just turned pro, I think he would have...
I know, it sucks.
Ah, well, look, it's not the end of the world, really.
No.
Right, are we done?
We're done.
We're done. We are done.
If anybody wants to go and collect golf balls in the muck in Spawell.
Yeah, there you go.
When is
or
this going to end,
actually,
by the way? Come on.
Tweet me a solution. getting rid of the mud.
So how many? Oh, get rid of the mud.
If you hit that table again,
yeah.
How many hours does it take to collect all the golf balls?
Three.
3 hours picking up golf balls. Like, I could send my kids down early in the morning.
Are you listening to a podcast or anything?
No.
Oh, for God, that is just...
No. Are there people hitting balls while you're picking them up?
No,
so you have to do this after it closes.
You have to do it when it opens.
7 a.m.
Before it opens.
7 a.m. to 10.
7 to 10.
Oh, my God, that is depressing.
How long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing it for?
Oh, the last whatever many weeks. Who knows? Alarm clock, 6 o'clock, bing, Groundhog Day.
I would be literally on the coke if...
Yeah, there you go.
Jesus. Yeah. Well,
you don't know what you guys don't know what work is. You know, I've seen both sides of the world now.
I very much have.
Yeah, it's true. So and it's because the ground is too soft for the tractors.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a solution for that, Peter. Okay. No one will.
What about maybe a drone type?
One guy came up with it. You should suck them up. You know, get a machine to suck them up. And I looked at him and went, "Wow."
With a drone, you could maybe.
No, you couldn't.
No,
heavy.
Is there not a Dyson type thing that you just go around and picks up the balls?
It would get heavy.
Yeah,
be the only thing. You need a big drone. No, look, I think you're stuck doing it. And there's another weather warning incoming.
I know. So I watch the weather every day.
You have another week. You're like a farmer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. Enjoy that, Peter.
All right. Thanks.
And if anyone wants to volunteer, they can.
Just come on down.
Yeah. All righty. We're done. We're back next week. Starter kid right here.